And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, by the way, I got to tell you, there's breaking news. Thanks to one of our listeners who did not tell me their name or where they're from, but we got a new listener. We got several new listeners, by the way. One of which I think was it Merrill from Asheville is new on the text line in the last few little bits.
Mm-hmm. And Teresa from Coleman County.
Teresa from Coleman County, outstanding. Appreciate y'all being in the listening audience. And then we got somebody else who just texted in an article that somebody had told me right before I walked upstairs to the studio. They said, have you heard what's happening at the Tennessee State Capitol? And I said, no, what? So apparently gun control activists and transgender activists have stormed the state capitol. I want to know when they're going to declare an insurrection. That's what I want to know. And one of those, I mean, it gets to the point of being weird. Like one of those transgender activists that stormed the state capitol in Tennessee yesterday describes herself, himself, whatever self, as a genderqueer clown nun. Okay, you're just trying to be offensive at that point. But this comes ahead of the declared Trans Day of Vengeance, which is scheduled allegedly in Washington, D.C. tomorrow, sponsored by Antifa. And so I'm just looking at the stuff going, wow. So you got pink hairs and you got all kinds of stuff happening in the state capitol. And by the way, they're having to be pushed back from the doors by state troopers. So this is not like a small crowd. It's a pretty good sized crowd. And it's a freak show. It just is. And don't, by the way, take offense if you want to. But it's a freak show. When you got a guy who dresses up and calls himself a transgender queer clown nun, that's just whatever. All right, we're back on the hard target conversation. Is that a call I got? Yeah, Sparky from Harvest. Sparky, how you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm awesome. Great show, you and Boomer.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, you spoke earlier of, what's her name, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah.
And her complete tap dance around the obviously the desire to confiscate all scary dark weapons, right? What kills me with her from Jump Street from the very beginning, she speaks as though she's in the executive inner circle, that she's a strategic thinker, and that, you know, it's okay to speak for the president when you make it clear you're articulating the president's message, but there's a certain amount of arrogance with her that I don't quite understand, considering she is a bit of a laughingstock, and that people on both sides of the political spectrum are really irritated with her complete lack of confidence in all quadrants. So when somebody puts her on the hot seat, especially when it comes to the Second Amendment, that always just tickles me to death.
Well, I've looked at this and thought, is she incompetent? Is she arrogant? Is it a combination of both? I think part of what we see, that arrogance that I clearly see just like you do, I think part of that's based on insecurity. She knows she doesn't know the answers. She's up there, and the whole world's watching her. She's supposed to have an answer. She knows she doesn't have an answer. She can't find it quick enough, and so she just looks arrogant. But that's really, I think, as much as anything, is her being insecure. It's ridiculous. I mean, why have they got her up there if you're not going to have an answer to simple questions?
And that is a good question, because, I mean, we've watched press secretaries under the last several presidents. They never really last that long. They do their best to leave a mark. Mainly to establish a rapport with all the reporters, and I believe the last one is a really pale lady.
Jen Psaki.
I can't recall her name.
She
there's a certain measure of confidence with her. I mean, she had to lie constantly and outrageously for her drooling Alzheimer patient boss. But this one, I don't get it. I can't believe they haven't shown her the door.
No, and I wonder how long it's going to last. But they almost have to admit the glass ceiling wasn't worth breaking if they do that. I watch and think, okay, you at least understand the issues. Like, it's pretty fair to say the president has no intent to confiscate weapons, but she doesn't understand the issues deep enough to know that's worth saying. Anyway, all right, brother, the music's playing. Appreciate you, Sparky. Have a great day. All right, you guys, stay tuned. We'll come right back. Hard targets, that's where we are, number two in the Triple Dipper. Be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And like that dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, hey, we're going to keep moving through this section on hard targets. Before we do that, though, I got to tell you, ZLA Solutions. ZLA Solutions, man, one of our original sponsors, been with us since the very beginning. ZLA Solutions is epic good at helping you make your business better. That's their goal in life. That's actually their motto. At ZLA, they say, we don't make it, we make it better. They will do all they can to help you with any number of things like quality control, sorting and containment, logistics, warehousing, but their bread and butter is still staffing. They'll put faces and names and jobs together like nobody's business. That's what they do. They will do the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing for you. They'll find you the onesies or twosies or a whole shift of people. You tell them what you need, they'll work it out. ZLA Solutions. You can find their website, ZLAUSA.com. Tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. That's ZLAUSA.com. All right, listen, we're going to move back into number two of the Triple Dipper, talking about hard targets. So first of all, I will tell you that I'm loving seeing the narrative change. You know, we've been the last few years. How does this happen when some of the best and brightest among us, our men and women of law enforcement, wind up becoming the targets of people's angst? Like suddenly, somehow or another, they stop being an honorable profession? No, they never did. But what I've got here right now is a series of articles that, first of all, just point out what a great job the men who went into that school did the other day in Nashville. They're being lauded. Not just as individuals, but it's bringing a positive light to law enforcement. And let me just point something out. There may not be a school shooting every day, praise God, but there are men and women putting on that blue uniform and going to hard places to do hard things every single day of the year, 24/7, 365. And if you've got any question at all about whether they care about their job, look what they do. Look what they put up with. And God bless the spouses. And so, yeah, all to say, I'm loving seeing the good news story come out of this. It was a horrible situation, but in the midst of a horrible situation, we got some good news. And we got some people who can't ignore the good news, thank you very much. They're doing all they can to make the Transgender Day of Visibility available by President Joe Biden and gun confiscation discussions in the daily press briefing with Karine Jean-Pierre. But I'm just going to tell you right now what we really have is the fact that that situation would have been a whole lot worse except for some good officers who did a good job doing what they're trained to do. I got a caller on line one. I'll tell you what, I'll talk about that real quick. Mike from Huntsville. Hey, Mike, how are you? Boomer, did I lose him again? Mike went away. All right. Tell you what, we'll see if he's back on the line. If he calls back in, we'll take it. I got the story right here. ABC News has a piece that came out yesterday. And it compares what happened in Nashville to what happened in Uvalde, Texas last year. Was it Robb Elementary School, I believe it was, where officers waited 77 minutes. That's an hour and 17 minutes before they even went into the school. Not just to find the target, but before they went into the school at all in Uvalde. Whereas in Nashville, we got a 911 call. They rushed to the scene, and we literally had rounds on target taking down the shooter within 14 minutes. That's amazing. What a drastic comparison that is. In Uvalde, it says, too, responding law enforcement officials faced a deluge of scrutiny after the gunman shot and killed 21 people, 19 of which were elementary school students. And at first, people were like, well, maybe this, surely in disbelief, like, it couldn't have been the officer. Well, it was. They stood outside, for whatever reason, waiting for someone to tell them what to do. Well, in Nashville, they didn't do that. Rex Engelbert, his partners, they went in, and they went in hard and fast, doing what they had to do. Is he back on the line, Boomer? Do we have him?
I think.
Okay, we're going to try it for the third time. Mike from Huntsville. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, Phil. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I got you, man. Yeah, how are you?
All right, I'm good. Hey, listen, one of the things, I've done a lot of litigation with the ATF and against them, and I wanted to mention something that's very interesting in the studies. Where does the federal government, under the delegated powers, get the authority to regulate the Second Amendment in the first place?
Is that a
question? They don't have it.
Okay, thank you. I'm about to say, is that a question, or are you going to follow with a statement? Go ahead.
Well, no, they don't have it, because under the National Firearms Act, which the NFA, which I've got Class 3 permits, but the only way that they got is by state acquiescence during Bonnie and Clyde, was in 1932. And so what they did, they gave them that authority, and they started seizing it ever since under the 68 Gun Control Act and the 86 Gun Control Act. And everything they did was an encroachment on the Second Amendment. The federal government does not have that authority under the delegated powers under the Constitution at all.
Well, I would agree. I would agree. It's the world we live in right now, but I would agree.
Yeah, but I mean, it's by acquiescence. And the thing is that that's never been challenged. We have some briefs on that issue, so we may bring it up sometime pretty soon. But we had the last case we had in federal court with Inga Johnson, and it was where the ATF was working a gun show and going after people, you know, selling guns at gun shows. And of course, she Rule 29'd it, which is a decision. She took it out of the jury and directed a not guilty verdict because it was so overreaching by ATF.
Wow.
But my point is that as far as hard and soft targets, Phil, you don't ever see anybody rob a gun show, do you?
No. I did see on Instagram the other day, and they actually posted it as one of those too stupid to live kind of videos that a dude tried to rob a gun shop, and it didn't work out well for him.
Well, generally, and that's my point, and what you have is you have hard and soft targets. You have some psycho tranny that goes in and starts killing children for an agenda that they don't want to release and talk about. Then you have the trans going to the place demanding confiscation of weapons, but yet at the same time they're putting stuff on NPR, which needs to be abolished anyway, is out there saying, oh, you guys need to arm up and go out and buy guns right now because they're out to get you, when they're the ones who are doing the aggression and the killing. So my point is that hard and soft targets, that's a fairly easy thing to solve. You put somebody who's armed that knows what they're doing, like these national cops. They were excellent. They were spot on. They covered each other. They went through that thing methodically, and they checked rooms, and they found where the gunfire was, and they did it right away. From start to finish, it was done in 14 minutes.
Yep.
Pretty impressive.
It was indeed. Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate you, Mike. Totally thanks cool. for calling in. Yeah, he's not wrong, and I'll tell you what kind of a segue off his point is, when it comes to hard targets, part of it is what you make yourself. All right, and let me just tell you. So, you know, when our daughter went off to college, you know, there was a discussion. All right, you know, you gotta, how about this? Things like keep your head on a swivel. What's that mean? Be aware of your surroundings. Don't be the person who walks out of Walmart at midnight, looking down at your phone and not paying attention to what's going on around you. In fact, I would encourage you to start thinking about, okay, before I walk out of Walmart, I'll pause at the door and survey the parking lot in front of me and then walk to my car and then give myself a little buffer to my car so that if somebody's hiding between my car and the other car, I see them before they have a chance to do something. I get a space. Or how about this? If you're someone who believes in concealed carry, make sure it's where you can get to it. Or how about this? If you're someone who doesn't carry a firearm, you can still carry pepper spray. You can also carry, if nothing else, a sound device. They make these things that you can actually pull your keychain and it emits a siren, and I guarantee you that'll be a deterrent. Make yourself a hard target. And then when it comes to schools, I think one of the things that was also very impressive, the police response was extremely impressive. But what was also impressive, and I was so glad that we had somebody point this out on yesterday's show, what was also extremely impressive, who was that? It was Matt Murphy, I think, was that this school had gone through the training. The school had. The school had gone through the training. The teachers knew what to do. In fact, one of the people who died was the principal of that school, who immediately left her desk, went straight to the scene where the shots were coming from. She died in the course of trying to confront the shooter while teachers were locking down their classrooms and getting kids into the hide point where you're furthest from the door and they can't see you. There's all kinds of things you can do to make a target harder. In a school, you can do simple things like, first of all, controlled entry. Don't have doors that are left unlocked. Have somebody who makes occasional rounds. Have somebody whose job it is once an hour to go around and just check doors. That's all you got to do. Assign that to the custodian if you want to. It doesn't matter who it is. Someone who checks the doors. How about this? When you design the school, you can actually design the doors to the classroom going out. Now, why is that? Because you can't kick in a door that goes out. You can breach entry quicker on a door that opens in than you can on a door you have to pull out. There's that. How about this? Have shades on the door windows. So if something is going down and the alarm goes off, you immediately close and lock the door and pull the shade down so the shooter can't look in and try to determine where people are. Make the target harder. Make it more inconvenient. It may not be the thing. I mean, granted, the school was actually locked in Nashville, and the shooter shot their way into the school. But they didn't rush into the school. They had to pause, and they had to do something. Every second you gain on the bad guy is a second you get to add to your life. Every second you gain on the incident is a second that law enforcement gets to try and respond. So you just make it harder. And I'm going to tell you, it's not rocket science. Think about what it does to slow somebody down even for a second. I heard yesterday somebody texted in, and they said that their wife, I believe, was a teacher who can't have a firearm in the school, so she has a can of wasp spray that will shoot 20 feet. I guarantee you that'll mess somebody up. Spray it in their face and make them work for it after that. Don't go down quietly, and don't sit there paralyzed with fear. Do what you've got to do to control the situation and slow the other person down. That's the thing. The biggest part about making a hard target is being aware of your surroundings and making it harder for them and make it easier for you to notify others. Do those things, and it'll be a new day. All right, I tell you what, Boomer, I'm not going to get to all of it. You know what, though? I am going to say this right before the break. We passed a law in 2014, when I was down there in Montgomery. And it does indeed require that these plans be in place. It's Title 16 of the Alabama Code, Section 16-1-44. School safety plans have to be on file. And with your school safety plan, if I'm not mistaken, you have to also file a copy of the school's layout so that law enforcement can use it to respond if they have to come to the scene. Because what you don't want to have is law enforcement gets there and all they can do is figure it out. And we're talking about if this is an extended situation like a hostage incident or a barricade. Law enforcement SWAT team needs to know where the entry points are, where the hide points are, what are the soft and hard parts of the vehicle of the building. So all said and done, we did pass something, and that was in the wake of, I believe, the Sandy Hook incident. Section 16-1-44 of Alabama Code does indeed require safety plans to be on file and constantly updated and planned and trained among the staff of the school. All right, folks, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back, and I will jump over to number 3 of the Triple Dipper. Skynet. Skynet's here. Skynet is here. The last thing you want to hear is, and then Skynet became self-aware. Oh, Lord. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.